Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Thursday, May 2nd, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. Sitka will miss two Alaska Airlines flights a day during the month of May in order to allow a paving contractor to replace the runway at the Rocky Cateras Airport. Flight 70, which arrives from Juneau at around 11 p.m. every night, and Flight 73, which departs at 6 a.m. the next morning with the same plane, have been suspended as of this week and will resume sometime around Memorial Day weekend. Only the airport terminal building is the property of Sitka. The airport runway, taxi areas, and ramp are owned and maintained by the State Department of Transportation. DOT spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says May has the right combination of decent weather and lighter traffic to accommodate the work.
The overlay is basically asphalt on the runway. And the reason that there's the nighttime closures and the reason why it's delaying the Alaska Airlines flight is that the construction company needs a long enough window to be able to pave the runway and then allow for that runway to set.
The contractor has been on site since April, hauling gravel and setting up paving equipment. Woodrow says work will begin each evening following the departure of Flight 67 at about 6:20 p.m. There is one major circumstance when overnight work will be interrupted.
Medevacs. And so we've worked with a lot of the medevac companies as well as the hospitals in the region to notify them of the closures. And we have a contract in place that the contractor will be able to have the runway open and enough distance for a medevac flight to be able to land and take off within an hour's notice.
Passengers aboard aircraft using the airport during the daytime should not notice any difference between the old runway surface and the new overlay. Woodrow says the standard for replacing runways is different than state highways, and so is the method.
We'll tear up the top layer of a long section of road and come back and then do the new asphalt overlay and then do the next side of the road.
That's not the case for runways.
They're doing the runway in sections. They're basically doing patches at a time. And so when actually the next plane takes off or lands, it will seem like just a smooth transition from the old asphalt to the new asphalt until the whole runway is done.
But that doesn't mean the aircraft will have the full length of the runway for the duration of the project. Woodrow says there will be times when pilots will have to tighten up their landings just a bit.
We've worked with Alaska Airlines quite a bit to see what they need as a minimum to be able to land the plane safely. And so there will be parts of the runway that will be closed, but there will be a large enough section of the runway that the planes will be able to land on without an issue.
Woodrow says most of the runway overlay work should be done by May 25th. Other work on the ramp could last into June. The state research vessel Kestrel is in Sitka this week, conducting another survey of herring spawn. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game issued its final update on the 2013 Sitka herring fishery Wednesday afternoon. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
This year's measurement of shoreline spawn came in higher than last year, but slightly lower than the 10-year average. 61.4 nautical miles of spawn showed up this year. Last year, it was 55.9, and the 10-year average is 61.7. This year saw two separate spawning events in Sitka Sound. The first one came between March 28th and April 7th and included parts of Middle, Crow, Gagarin, and Cassiana Islands, as well as smaller islands to the south, the Halibut Point Road shoreline, Japonsky Island, Samsung Cove, and Shelikoff Bay. The second spawn ran from April 15th until the 23rd. That happened along more parts of western Cruzoff Island, as well as northern Middle Island, Promisla and Eastern Bays, Stargaven Bay, and more. Sitka's commercial herring fishery is lucrative and highly competitive, but the last 2 years have disappointed the fleet. Both this year and last, fishermen caught less than half their goal before spawning forced an end to the season. Fishermen are targeting roe, the eggs still inside the females, so once they've been expelled, they lose their commercial value. This is Ed Ronco in Sitka.
Senator Lisa Murkowski has a lot to say about the U.S. Forest Service. That agency and other topics were on the table earlier this week in the Republicans' hometown of Ketchikan when she talked to reporters about issues affecting the region. KRBD's Layla Carey reports.
Lisa Murkowski is unhappy with the U.S. Forest Service and doesn't mince words when she's talking about it.
We've got the chief of the Forest Service who comes before the committee. He says what we need to do in these communities that were once timber dependent, we need to diversify, and tourism is what it's all about. And then the Forest Service turns around and cuts the number of permits that the air taxi operators are able to offer tours, cut them by 25% and 30% from year prior.
The state senior senator in Washington, D.C. also is worried about obtaining Forest Service permits for regional projects, including hydroelectric dams and mines. She says Forest Service Chief Tom Tidwell needs to visit Southeast Alaska to understand why certain options, such as using helicopters for dam construction, aren't practical.
I don't think he has any concept of how you do this in a place like the Tongass. They don't call it misty fjords for nothing. Fjords is like what are around us here. So I said, you need to come up and see what we're talking about in the Tongass. You need to understand what it is that we're dealing with.
But permitting isn't the only issue Murkowski has with the Forest Service. Secure Rural Schools, which provides payments to communities affected by the decline in timber harvest, is another concern. Those payments are dedicated to schools, and what the government decides to do with the program could have a serious impact on rural Alaska.
It is a big deal, and right now I'm irritated in a big way at Chief Tidwell, who is head of the Forest Service, who came before our committee a couple weeks back, and when asked about secure rural schools and the fact that the payments went out in January and before sequester was announced, and now they are going to claw back those dollars that came out to the eligible states, including Alaska.
That's about $800,000 distributed to Alaska that the agency wants back. Murkowski says that if the communities don't or can't return the money, the Forest Service had intended to assess fines and late fees. Murkowski and other senators drafted a response basically saying don't do that. She says a reasonable alternative would be to simply withhold the amount owed from any future payments. She adds that the Senate is working on a one-year fix for the Secure Rural Schools program, which may or may not be funded this coming year.
What we'd really like to do is figure out long-term how we deal with this. Many of us believe that the way you provide to meet the obligations under Secure Rural Schools is you allow for more timber harvesting.
Murkowski says that another senator also is looking into expanding revenue sharing that would include onshore renewable resources such as wind farms that are on public lands. She says revenue from those resources could be used for additional development projects. During her one-hour news conference, Murkowski touched on a variety of topics, from sequestration to immigration. For the latter, a bipartisan group of senators is working on a reform package that she says should improve the current immigration system. She also talked briefly about her role in the Senate and her willingness to cross party lines. One example is a bill she's co-sponsored with Oregon Democrat Ron Wyden.
Wyden and I just introduced last week campaign finance disclosure bill that is designed to generate a lot of controversy on both sides. His side is mad at him because now they've got to do disclosure that they don't want to do. My side is mad at me because now they've got disclosure to do that they don't want to do. And I think there needs to be disclosure when it comes to donations.
Murkowski is on a whirlwind tour through Alaska. From Ketchikan, she's headed to the Mat-Su Valley, then Anchorage, Fort Greeley, Delta Junction, Glen Allen, Fairbanks, Anchorage again, and then back to Washington, D.C. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
The Tlingit and Haida Central Council expects some hits from sequestration. President Ed Thomas told delegates about projected cuts during the council's recent tribal assembly in Juneau.
I think pretty much across the board, we're talking about a 5% negative impact. Nobody has come up with anything less than that.
He says the cuts will take about $1.3 million out of the council's approximately $27 million annual budget. The federal government provides much of the funding. Council programs provide vocational training, public safety, family and youth services, and tribal courts. The Tlingit and Haida Central Council also uses interest from approximately $11 million trust fund. But President Thomas says the earnings need to be saved.
All in all, we can't keep spending the interest and expect to survive for the long term. We have to have at least inflation proofing. And the only way to do that is to live within our means, not do things that cost money that we can't pay for.
The Juneau-based council represents more than 28,000 tribal members in Alaska and the lower 48. The tribal assembly voted down a proposal reducing the number of voting delegates by around 20%, rules requiring one delegate per 150 tribal members. A proposal from Thomas would have only counted members with active addresses that they established their residency. Thomas says it's a big problem in bigger cities.
Seattle and Juneau have the largest number of delegates and the largest number of people that we have bad addresses for.
April's Tribal Assembly was the council's 78th. It was held in the Elizabeth Paradovich Hall in downtown Juneau. We have additional details from the meeting on our website. The U.S. Coast Guard recently helped place seismic sensors along a fault near Craig in southeast Alaska. Crew from the cutter Maple worked with the U.S. Geological Survey scientists to deploy 12 seismic sensors along the 28-mile section of the Queen Charlotte Fairweather Fault last week. The Coast Guard, in a news release, says the seismometers are meant to improve the understanding of recent earthquake activity and related hazards that affect coastal communities in the region. Peter Hausler, a USGS research geologist, says the fault is similar to the northern San Andreas Fault, but located entirely offshore, making it harder to study. The Coast Guard says the cutter has all the equipment on board necessary to handle large equipment, like the sensors. The instruments are expected to be recovered next month. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. Now here's a look at Sitka's own weather. Today, expect rain showers with highs around 47, south wind 5 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, rain is likely mainly in the evening, lows around 43, south wind 5 to 15 miles per hour. Friday, rain likely, highs around 49, and Saturday, rain, highs around 50. You're listening to KCAW in Sitka.